This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We know that kids sometimes do things they regret. That's why they have parents. But when Janie Gorman decides she wants to live on a farm, her parents agreed. Now she's in high school, not so thrilled with the idea. She's an outcast who sometimes goes to school with hay in her hair and goat droppings on her shoes. That's the setup for Frances O'Rourke Dowell's new young adult novel, 10 Miles Past Normal. It explores what it's like to be an unpopular teenager trying to fit in. And Frances O'Rourke Dowell joins us in the studio now. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me back.
What is the, give us a summary, setup 10 Miles Past Normal?
We've done a pretty good job. It starts in Janie's freshman year. She goes into high school very enthusiastic. She's going to have a brilliant high school career. But things do not go as planned. Part of the problem is that she's going to a huge school. And she doesn't have lunch with any of her friends. She only has one class with a friend. She's eating lunch in the library. And she just feels lost and really alone. So it's that's a problem. The other problem is what you talked about. She's dragging bits and pieces of the farm with her to school. And so her reputation is someone who's kind of weird and doesn't smell very good, which is not how you want to start high school necessarily.
Never a good way to go to high school, particularly not at lunch or on the bus, as we learned in the opening chapter.
Yeah, she's got some bad bus experience.
Got some bad bus experience. What's fascinating about it, a kind of subtext, is this is something she really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's become a big problem. And this is precisely what adolescence is, isn't it? This utter break from all the things that were good about your life.
Yes. And you can't even, one of the things that interests me thinking back over adolescence and pre-adolescence is that break. It's almost like you cross a bridge and you don't look back. You don't really look back until you're much older. But it's fast. And your parents have this great affection for your childhood years. And you're like, I don't even want to go there. I don't want to think about that. That's not who I am anymore.
Right. And it's the perplexing things for parents, because you went to bed, the little girl who liked the farm, and you woke up, the girl hating me
right,
for taking you here.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Will you read for us?
I will. I'm going to read a little bit from the beginning, where Janie's kind of telling us about her early farm experience. I remember the day we moved out to the farm. The excitement I felt as I ran like a maniac up and down the stairs of the farmhouse, built circa 1892, with its windows that rattled with every breeze and broad oak floors that groaned in the middle of cold winter nights. I was Laura Ingalls Wilder, Anne of Green Gables. I was a girl who lived on a farm. Outside, the honeysuckle was just beginning to bloom, and the whole world smelled sweet. And the kids at school, they thought it was cool we'd moved to a farm. We had the fifth grade end of the year party out by our pond, and the sixth grade fall festival took place in the barn. Being farm girl meant social bonus points. High school changed all of that. For one thing, no one I met in high school had fond memories of hanging out in our barnyard and feeding corn to the chickens. For another, no one thought it was cute that half the time I smelled like the barn I spent the first 30 minutes of my morning in. They thought it was weird. They thought I was weird. And suddenly, I realized that living on a farm was weird. Milking goats and pushing a chicken-mobile around the yard every morning, dumping eggshells and coffee grounds into the composter every night after the dishes were done, knowing way too much about manure and fertilizers and the organic way to grow bok choy. What kind of normal teenage girl lived this way? The people at school were right. I was weird. And I only had myself to blame.
Frances O'Rourke Dowell reading from her new novel, 10 Miles Past Normal. Janie then is forced to navigate this horrid unknown territory for a little while, but then finally begins to understand who she is a little bit and runs into a character named Emma. Tell us about Emma.
Emma is Sarah's big sister. Sarah is Janie's best friend, and Janie and Sarah have always worshipped Emma. She's older, she's cooler, she gets great grades, but she is in some ways a wild child. Her boyfriend rides a Harley Davidson. She does things like geeky things, like goes to Renaissance fairs. She just is someone who they really look up to. She seems very free. And of course, you know, when you're 14, someone who's 16 and has a car, That's pretty cool, just by itself.
Well, and when they're doing abnormal things but seem to be, if not popular, at least at peace, that can be a very attractive quality.
Right. And that's – I think Emma has that. She anyone who does what they want is some – it seems to be accepted and doesn't really care either way. That's a that's a place where I think many of us still aspire to get to.
Well, because that's the challenge, isn't it? When you're, again, in that sort of unknown, you know, no man's land where you're not who you used to be, but you don't know who you are yet, you have two choices. You either find a way to fit in, right, or find a way not to care.
Right.
And so Janie finds somebody who has seemed to have achieved the latter.
Right, exactly.
To some extent. And then the civil rights movement, again, it's not set in the civil rights movement, but it is a kind of historical piece, a way of studying the civil rights movement, plays a part in the novel.
It does. Janie and Sarah are taking a class together, the great girls and women of American history, and they have to do a project. And they end up deciding to do a project on a woman named Septima Brown, who is loosely based on Septima Clark, who established citizenship schools through the South in the 50s and early 60s when there were literacy laws that kept blacks from voting. And the citizenship schools, one of the things they did was taught literacy, so blacks could register to vote. And that this is the project that Janie and Sarah, and they draw Emma in as well. And they get involved and get to know a lot about the local history of where they live and also about people who really have taken big risks and done really important things with their lives.
So, again, a question of or the ability, I guess, some way to find an identity, not only in the work that you're doing, but also studying people whose project was just that. Who are we in the face of this sometimes hostile environment?
Right.
So it becomes an interesting challenge. Is that how normal is that for kids, do you think, the getting involved in an academic project or some other kind of project outside of social activities in school to find themselves?
I think it may be more normal than we are led to believe. I think sometimes if you take your picture of young adults from popular media, you would not think that they'd have any desire to get involved in a project like that. But I know a lot of kids, and some of it is through church, some of it is through schools, but who really are reaching for meaning. I mean, when you're that age, you have so much energy and you so have so much passion. And if you can actually find a way to direct it, you want, you know, one of the things that keeps coming up in the book is live large. You want to live large. And so I see that. And sometimes I'm amazed by it because I really spent most of my adolescence reading books and eating ice cream sandwiches and listening to the radio. And so you meet these kids, and they're like, yeah, I just spent the summer in Haiti. Wow. But it's there. And I think the desire is very much there with a lot of kids. Sometimes they don't figure out how to use that energy until they're a little older.
How aware of all of these dynamics, these internal dynamics, were you as an adolescent? Were you precocious about understanding what was going on with you, or did you suffer right along with the rest of us?
You know, one thing, I'm be 47 next month, and so I think it was about 10 years ago, my mid-30s, when I finally realized I am an introvert, and that has everything to do with how I am socially. So imagine me in high school, and I went to three different high schools. My dad was in the Army, as you know, and so I had a varied high school experience. But in every one of those high schools, I wanted to be involved. I wanted to be social. I like people, but I am the person who has to leave the party after 45 minutes because I'm just spent. And when I was in high school, I kept joining clubs and then not going to the meetings because at the end of the day, I was, you know, I just couldn't do it. And so, but I didn't understand that about myself, that I just... You know, some people are energized by being with other people, and some people like me and all the other introverts I know are energized by having time to read and be by themselves. And that was who I was, but I had no understanding. I just thought I was really weird.
When did that realization come to you? And did it come through writing, or was it what prompted you?
No, it really, you know what? It came to me, again, when I was in my 30s, and my friend Amy explained to me what an introvert was because I was always, because I'm not shy. And that's what I couldn't figure out. It's like, I'm not shy. I'm not like I can't talk to people. And she said, well, no, you're an introvert. Here's what an introvert is. And I'm like, oh, that is who I am. So it informs a lot now how I make decisions and choices I make, understanding that about myself and wishing almost always that I would were otherwise. I mean, I would love to be hugely social and have big parties and things.
Does that articulate understanding about sort of your own evolution and what you are maybe essentially or not help your writing? Do you need that to write?
I think it does help because, I mean, you can't then take your character and make her have that same understanding because that's an understanding I came to as an adult. But it can help you understand your characters better when you have those kind of insights into how people work, you know, whether it's me or, you know, having a long relationship, say, with my husband and understanding, you know, then right. You know and you can see how people evolve and that helps you bring more to your characters.
Sure. I would think you could see with greater clarity which details underscore that particular characteristic
yes.
better than others. So,
right.
So this one in and leave that bit of dialogue
right.
out or something. Well, let's talk about the novel some more because in this novel we talked about Janie's friendship with Emma and Sarah, but another element of the novel is about how friends drift apart. Janie and her best friend Sarah do start to go their own separate ways. How did that story relate to your personal story at all?
A little bit, and I think probably toward the latter part of high school. As I said, I went to three high schools, so I was constantly moving away from friends. But you get to a point where you do start understanding more about yourself and what you want to do and who you are. And it happens because, especially in your earlier, in your childhood years and your earlier teen years, a lot of it is who you're friends with is geography. It's who you're in homeroom with. Sometimes it's really who, you know, I was always sort of one of the sort of nice, smart girls, sort of in the middle group. But then you get older and you start finding out who you are and what suddenly you realize you were born to be on stage or you were born to play lacrosse or what. And that kind of drifting takes place. And it can be sad because it's not a break. It's not like, oh, you've done something, you've betrayed me. It's just like, we're really different as it turns out, even though we've been friends for so long.
Now, your characters are girls. You write, I think, mostly for young women, and yet you have two sons. Do they read your work, and does this inform your project as a parent, writing this work?
That's a good question. I also have two brothers and no sisters. So,
no.
I have some books for younger readers called the Phineas L. McGuire series about a fourth grade boy who loves science, and that was very much informed by my older son, Jack, who's now 12. And Jack does read my work. I don't know that he's read The Secret Language of Girls because it's pink.
Yeah.
But he certainly has read this and other books. And, you know, that's a good question. I think I write so much more from my own experience and as opposed to drawing from my children's mm-hmm. experience. But what's helpful is to be in their schools. I volunteer a lot and I'm the assistant coach of the Battle of the Books team at Jack's Middle School. And so they allow me access to other kids and allow me to watch kids interacting. And what I've discovered mostly is nothing changes. You know, technology changes. Mm-hmm. They're texting. We didn't even have we didn't have anything. We had three channels, but as far as how kids deal with each other, it stays the same. But it's always good to have that confirmed.
Battle of the Book. Do you do warm-ups before the Battle of the Books?
I suppose not. We practice. So you've got a team that's the Battle of the Books list for next year is out. And we in the fall, we will get together. Mostly I'm the one. I stand by the chalkboard and keep score.
I don't know the Battle of the Books. You actually is it the total number of books you read?
No. Oh,
Sounds like a contest.
It is a contest. It is a statewide competition. And it's for middle school students, although now I think there's a junior Battle of the Books as well. So 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And the North Carolina Librarians, I don't know if it's association, but mm-hmm. whatever it is, every year they come up with a list. It's around 30 books.
They don't throw them at each other.
They don't. There's no gunplay.
Okay,
there's
good.
No, it's a very nonviolent battle. But what happens in these competitions, so it starts like you go to your local, your regional, and then a district or a district regional, and then there's the big state Battle of the Books. And they ask questions of the most minute details about these books. And it's amazing. And as an author, You know, I'm just like, it's thrilling, you know, to watch these kids really get involved with these books, and they know them so well, and it's exciting. It's a lot of fun.
Great fun.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Book Report.
Yes.
Now, a lot of young adult fiction is pretty dark. They've got lots of bad behavior. You shy away from that in your novels. In fact, you get scolded, I'm told.
Yes, sometimes. I was scolded by my editor. She after she read the first draft, she's like, Frances, someone's got to be drinking a beer. Doesn't have to be Janie, but it has to be somebody. And this is – I think of this as a very young adult book. It's really in some ways a middle grade book, and – you know, I talk to a lot of librarians in my travels through various schools, and they'll talk about how it's hard. There's a certain age, like 12, 13, 14, especially with girls, where it's hard to find them stuff that, you know, you feel good about giving them.
I mean, do you worry about that? Do you worry about, you know, sort of placing something in there that someone could?
I do. I do. But I think there's a place for books that deal with this darker stuff. So it's not that I don't think they should be out there. I very much think they should be out there. But I also think there's a place for funnier, lighter books. And so I wanted this book to be funny, and I wanted my mother to be able to read it without going, were you doing that when you were 14? You
know? Man, to write a book that both your mother and your children approve of, that's hard work.
And the girls at church. I mean, it's a lot of people.
I think you've done it. Frances, thank you so much. Great to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Durham writer Frances O'Rourke Dowell's new young adult novel is called 10 Miles Past Normal. You can find Frances online at the Writers and Illustrators of North Carolina website, wincbooks.com. That's the State of Things for today. Thank you for listening. You know where to find us, stateofthings.org. We're on Facebook, too. Our program is produced by Amber Nimick and Alex Granados. William Kumpf and Nasser Abbas are our interns. Robin Copley is our technical director. Our managing editor is Lindsay Foster Thomas. And Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.